You by Martin, that's me,
and Matt,
that's him. Thank you for listening, everyone, and those on Facebook now, or sorry, if you've got Facebook, you can go to it and watch a recording of this with video, I guess. Yes, joined by Jamie, who's just come back off the track. Thanks for joining us again, Jamie, and his brother Ryan. Thanks, guys, for joining in. Quick question to start off. So I was thinking, because Ryan, you obviously do a bit of racing, you both can have a go as a combined pair on a sidecar, and if you are, who's driving?
I'm definitely not passenger anyway. Free.
I'm not passenger.
Right. Looks like we're going against each other again.
So an arm wrestle, yeah. to see who wins.
Yeah.
So for those who want to just quickly jump on the and watch a Facebook version of this, it's quite interesting because on the feed we've got a sort of 1:20 clip from the helicopter on IOMTT. Hopefully they won't get a lawsuit for playing it, but it's a following you, Jamie, over the mountain there. So you're just in from four laps tonight. We're on Tuesday night, for those listening.
Yeah, four laps, which brings me up to 12 in total.
Okay. And how are you acclimatising to the track?
Yeah, starting to feel more at home now. Finding places where I need to get stand up and get on the pegs and just let the bike move around underneath me. So the more I'm doing, the more I'm getting familiar with everything. And yeah.
Give me some examples of places where that you're doing that type of thing.
Coming after the Crunk of Oddy, where you drop down the hill there, I've started just standing on the pegs a lot there.
And is that something you should do, or are you feeling that's going to make you more comfortable or faster? Or is that just what you're feeling is natural around there?
Like more comfortable, like just let the bike move underneath you and just keep power on to keep it more settled, basically. Keep it in a straight line, easier.
Yeah.
So a couple of questions that I was asked when I mentioned we were doing this. Somebody asked me about when you I suppose the difference between stood before you go out and when you're out, and your kind of mentality around, obviously there's a mass amount of concentration going on when you're out there, and is it, I think their words were, does your concentration, I suppose, change from just around a pit lane, or is it just because you're naturally a biker, it's just you go into this zone of you kind of know what you're doing? And I don't know, yeah, just maybe talk about that mentality when you're on a bike, especially around here, and maybe compared to short circuits.
Yeah, to be honest, I've been getting less nervous than I have before a short circuit here at the minute. I don't know why, I'm just trying to keep calm in my own head. Don't want to think about things too much. And just taking it all in and just to enjoy it, really. Yeah. I feel like I'm quite chilled out at the minute with it all.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. So Ryan, obviously, spannering, as they say, for him. So let's go back to Sunday, before he went out. How was that experience? So as a brother, you're a racer, so you can appreciate what he's doing. At the same time, there's nerves there, there's emotion, what I just described. I suppose thinking about, obviously, why that is the case. Is that because you obviously know his ability, you're comfortable with what he's doing? Where do you think those nerves come from?
Being around it such a long time, we grew up with my dad when he had everyone coming up, when he brought people through as well, and then obviously Miggy's my best mate, so I came right through the mangs with him, and it's so hard to watch someone set off down that hill. It's just your emotions, you're proud, you're scared. It's just, I think you're a lot worse yourself than what the rider is, because once they set off, they're concentrating on you.
Yeah,
and you're sat watching your phone thinking, if he's not there in 5 minutes, where is he at Glen Helen? You know, there's so many things going on once he's gone. And I think, like, when Jamie's out there, we haven't actually stopped, like, coming back down here, getting fuel, just all the bits, even going to the RI tent, getting tear-offs put on. There's just so many things going on in the background that people don't see. It's a proper team effort to do what we do. It is hard.
So that, I assume in some ways that, I suppose, rushing around when he's out is probably in some ways a good thing, because you're not just sat
Yeah, exactly.
Flicking for the next sectaton.
You try to take your head away from it as well, but at the same time, you just want to be checking to make sure he is there and everything is okay. And if he's not there, you're just waiting for some random number to call you to say, broke down or whatever's gone on and couldn't get me. So I think it's actually a lot harder for us than what it is for him, but he's obviously got a lot going through his head at the same time, because he's got a 200-odd corners to learn. Yeah. He's got to make sure, like you say, he's done 12 laps now. Yeah, it's, of the CT course, that sounds a lot, but because it's such a long course, but when you think he's only been through every corner on this track 12 times on that bike, it's actually nothing, you know. He's not even close to serving his apprenticeship yet. There's just so far to go from here yet.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that. So Jamie will set off, you come back, kind of things are going through on a typical, so if he's going out for two laps, you hope therefore he'll go straight through. Kind of things are you thinking about getting ready?
So we're always watching around, and then we'll feel him for two, and if he's not comfortable, sort of say now he's starting to get more and more pace about him, there's going to be more and more problems pop up with the bike handling, and like a full tank of fuel, you'll start feeling all these differences now. So once he's gone, in our mind and his mind, he's gone for two, so we're not going to see him for 40 minutes now, but we're always at the gate making sure he comes through the grandstand flat out, not on the brakes, to come in and see us. And then again there's a spare bike sat there for him, so if he comes in and this thing's got a misfire or whatever, this other bike's got to be sat there warmed up, tyres warm, same scenario as the other bike, and we've got to make sure that he can get off one bike comfortably and get back on another and go. And then if that is the case, we've had it before, just fortunately, touch wood, we haven't this week, and we've got to then strip this bike down in the pits to try and cure this problem, to get him back out on his good bike again, to clear his head, to say, yeah, this is good to go again now for tomorrow. So it doesn't stop. And
no, and just on that, we're talking about having that spare bike, how have you felt on the one you're on now then? As I presume it's been, you know, everything's run the way you have, because you haven't changed. Has there been a lap where you thought, I'm going to try it, or because you are constantly increasing on those lap times, you want to keep seeing what you can get out of it?
Yeah, I feel like I just want to keep clocking laps on the bike. I'm going to race. It sounds a bit daft, but it's got a dash on it, so basically it's a gear selector indicator, so it tells me on the dash, there's a big number in my face to tell me what gear I'm in, and I look down a lot and rely on that when I go into a corner, so I know what gear I am, what gear I need to be in, and I think that's a big help for me. Yeah.
And is that not on the T-bike? That display?
No, it's not on the T-bike.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. So it's just, you're comfortable. Go on, you're gonna.
Yeah, no, these bikes are, you say they're fairly old now, to be fair, but 600 stops getting produced, but they just produced a new one now. But these engines never had a gearbox speed sensor, so the Hondas don't normally have them, but because we've got all the electronics and everything we've got on it, this one works off gearbox speed, so it's constantly working out where it is itself. But there's the odd time it can think it's in one gear when it's in the other, but it's only briefly, and it then realizes what speed it's doing. But no, we are in fifth here, not sixth. But like you said, it's even short circuits. When you're from sixth and to say come up to Ramsey Hairpin, that just to look down and say, oh yeah, I am in first. Everything's going past you so fast, but on a bike it's actually so slow. You got a lot of time to take stuff in and check your water, check your gears. There's just so much going on, but your brain goes with that speed, and it's just like sitting here talking now. You can focus on whatever you look at still.
And obviously being racers, you find that happens quite quickly, that acclimatizing to that speed, because you talk about looking at a number and it's be, you know, my thought would be that's the last thing I'll be looking at.
Yeah, obviously Jamie can speak different for the TT because I haven't done it, but like when you go short circuits, we've had a full winter off, and then within two laps, even at Derby, you're doing 170 miles an hour down the back straight, but it's just normal. It doesn't feel like heaven's so fast. But Jamie can talk more about this place because he's got houses and stuff going past them instead.
Yeah, the main place where it starts to feel fast is where going through Kirkmichael. Once I'm through, because I'm obviously still learning, I'm quite steady. But coming out of Douglas Road corner, driving out, and then coming back for the first apex for the curb on the right, and the out to the bus stop on the left. And once I'm out there now, I know that I can go hold it flat out from there all the way. I'm all the way down now to just after the zebra crossing, so I'm just bridging the gap each lap. I'm just edging it that little bit further.
Yeah, okay, and that's the key, I guess. Here is that have your baseline, and then just different sec. You know.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, I started on baseline, which is well back, basically. But the main onboard I was watching before I've done it was from Cameron Donald in 2013. He's got it shows his revs, it shows his brake, it shows his throttle position sensor, it shows his brake pressure, his gears. So like going off that, I know obviously it's a fast lap what he's done, but I know where he can go to, but I know where I'm at the minute now.
Very patient, I must say. I mean, we talked about it, I think, on the first podcast. Patience, I guess, is the key, because
definitely.
By instinct, you're obviously a racer anyway, and you want to go quick, but that patience, because like you touched on there, 12 laps is nothing. It's reality.
Nothing, it's a place you've got to respect, because you don't get a second chance. If you go in too fast, the stuff ain't going to move around you, whereas a short circuit, you can just run onto the grass and come back in 5 minutes later, but here you can't do that, can you? You got to work like he is. It's like quite relieving to watch Jamie go like 10 seconds lap faster, not go like say tonight he's just done a sub 20, like it's taken him two nights to do this now, instead of going 21 minutes first lap and then 19:50, you don't want to see that as study. You just want to see the 10 seconds each lap instead of like something big, you just know
absolutely. So Ryan might laugh at this question, but again, someone else asked me to ask you about preparation in regard to what you eat. So you particularly, obviously you're hydrating right now for having just done four laps, but before, you, is there any prep, or you just because you're so young, you just crack on?
I had a Cycle 360 this morning. And then
sausage bap and some electrolytes.
Electrolytes throughout the day. Had a packet of crisps and a chocolate bar before I went out. And then I had plenty of fluids, and then I've got energy blocks in between from when I've come in from my second lap. I'll have a packet of them and just go back out.
And I presume, again, a really stupid question, but you crack on to the second lap. I appreciate the fuel, but I remember a story years ago that was, well, it was one of the guys, was it Dunlop, Robert maybe? It was a four-lap race. He just went through after lap two and forgot to pull in, forgot what lap he was on. And eventually ran out Sorby or somewhere, didn't he? You're very conscious of what, you know, there's no point of like, what lap am I on?
No, I'm quite conscious. I know when I'm on my second lap to pull in. And
what the new boards like, that you, do you see, like, obviously they've still got flag waivers, I assume, but they've got these boards up now with the lights on telling you what's going on.
Yeah,
do
they're amazing. Right. When last night's session got red flagged, I come out of Union Mills, and like the board was way ahead of me, but it was obviously because it was red, to get red flagged, it was just like, it was like in your face because they're that bright. So they're a massive thing,
difference.
I think round here, I think that's brilliant that they've brought that in.
So talk a little bit about the mountain. I think certainly, again, we're Tuesday today, Monday, was it more wind around? Is that something you noticed riding the bike up there?
I thought it was windier yesterday than Sunday, but when I'd stopped at Union Mills, I was obviously speaking to John and Crowey, and they said that it was windier the day before. But yeah,
something you're thinking about when you're on the mountain, or is it not that windy at the moment to think I need to be slightly left or right on the road because of the...
Yeah, I'm still very conscious of the wind that it can take you. There's a sock on the inside of, just before the inside of Windy Corner. So obviously I'm looking for that sock, whether it's going to push me in, push me wide, so I can either bring my braking marker back or come in a bit slower because I know the wind's going to push me out. And yeah.
Never even noticed that sock before. Is that then in the field?
I'm imagining
it.
I think they just put it up for TT. There's one at the end of the mile as well.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, but
like an airport sock type of thing.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I don't know That's what I'm saying. Obviously, I'm going to a trainer sock when you talk about that.
Oh, right.
Yeah. There's a sock at the end of the row. It's like,
I mean, crusty old socks. No, I don't think so. Just out of interest, before you rode the TT, where was your favourite place to watch?
I like the end of the Crankavody.
Molly's.
Just at the dip before you do, before you wheelie and start tipping into the 11th. You could get in a little spot behind a tree and you're literally there on the white line next year, and
now you're
fast.
Now you're going through there.
Now I'm going through there.
Is it still your favourite place?
Yeah, I do like it because of the wheelie down Crankavody. I like that. And then the wheelie after it. Yeah, it's good. I'm
trying to scare the crowd.
Yeah.
So, and I know it's important. You're obviously looking way down the road, pure based on the speed you're travelling. Are you thinking still, and I don't know whether it changes over time, but as you get to use more use to the track, like if we're going along Crankavody, you're obviously thinking about the right-hander at the end.
Yeah.
I guess there's a point somewhere where people are then thinking about the next part of the course. But for you, is it just still, it might, maybe it always is like that, but is it just, it's this corner, then the next corner, or is there some extra thought process about, I need to make sure I exit in this place with this speed to think about the next corner?
Yeah, I've got a, you're always thinking about the next place, but the main corners, you're always, until you get to them, I'm thinking where I need to apex and where I need to be on the road. And then once I'm in, say, halfway around the corner, once you've apexed, like, your mind's in the next place already before you even had it.
Mm-hmm. Question I was talking to Martin about earlier, I know it sounds stupid for me, you obviously don't have mirrors. How do you know when guys are coming behind you and to move out of the way? And, you know, I know for you guys it must be second nature in that sense, but you're obviously concentrating on what you're doing, and the guy coming behind you, because I guess you can't be thinking about someone coming behind you or panicking or all that. I assume you just race, and the guys are that experienced or that have been doing it a while, that they just know when to take, or like, how does that work, I guess? Or is it just suddenly you'll be going somewhere and someone's just come past, and then you just think about what you're up to?
Yeah, it's quite a tricky one for the TT course, but from my past experience from, say, like Derby, when you're lapping someone, once they see you before you even get to them, they're conscious you're coming.
Mm.
And sometimes they try and move out of the way and it makes it worse.
Mm.
So because that's like my mindset of that, I stay in the racing line, do my own thing, and because they're faster, they're going to make the way around me. But if there's somewhere, if I can hear, they've got to be really close. I heard it was Matt Stevenson, I heard him behind me, and I knew he was there, but I was just waiting for him to come by at some point, or waiting for a straight for to let him by, so then I could see where he was, going for a couple of corners if I could. And yeah, you just let them make their own way around.
Yeah.
It makes it more dangerous, because if you pull to the left, they might be on the left side of the road trying to go around you that way.
Mm.
So, but because it's so high speed and say flowing, unless they've got a really fast bike compared to yours, then it's quite difficult for people to do a nice clean pass. But you still got to do a clean pass around you, because it's a brick wall outside, isn't there?
It's the situations where you're not aware somebody's there and they come past you and like, shit. Is there those kind of...
Who come past me? It was... I think it might have been Rutter the first night. It was like, I didn't even... But he was on the big bike, so he wouldn't have been behind me for long at all.
Yeah.
Or even if he... I can't even remember where he passed me, but it was like, boom, straight gone. Like, yeah.
Bit of a jump.
Yeah.
Give you a tap on the shoulder on the way through.
Yeah.
So back to... I want to talk about the bike setup, Ryan. We mentioned, as you get quicker, that's things that become more... You have to think about that a bit more. Is that the speeds Jamie's now getting to? Is that things that dialogue when you're coming in halfway through and after a session where you're starting to talk about, is a bit stiff through here, blah blah blah?
Yeah, well, obviously we've got Andy there that does all of our engine and suspension work, and that's me and Jamie just come back and relay the information to him, and he'll just try that and go again. So that's what we do. But definitely with this place, like at the minute Jamie's on a very basic, really soft setup, just so it takes the bumps well at the minute. And like Josh is obviously in a 1:14 tonight, so he's at a speed where he's actually tramping on a bit now, so he is going to, like he's saying, the bike is moving around and it's starting to head shake and stuff, and because we've got it so soft, yeah, it's going to be sitting down, it's going to be keeping the front wheel light, and it's all part of the nature. This was all expected. We just wanted Jamie to get to this speed for him to come back and go, right, like, I don't know what Jamie's saying now, because we're not really supposed to, since he got back tonight.
Sorry.
but yeah, he might just say, just make it. It won't be the case. I don't think it's the case of springs at the minute. It's just there's that much dampening you can change and adjust on the bike. We'll just give me a few clicks here or there and just say try that and then see where he goes with it.
Yeah, right. Okay. And that's something you're noticing then, different.
Yeah, because I'm carrying more momentum now through the corners. Like it's because it's so soft, obviously, because you need a bike soft around here as well. I'm used to quite a hard setup around a short circuit. So now it's like lifting the wheel off the deck a little bit when I'm in hard on the brakes and the places where you need to be.
Yeah, right. So go back to, again, a couple of nights ago, we talked earlier about you being laid back, but a couple of delays early on. Obviously it finished early yesterday. Is that frustrating for you, those delays, or are you pretty laid back and just go with the flow?
Nah, quite easy. It was accidents, wasn't it? So it's well, you just hope everyone's safe. As soon as you see a red flag, you just hope everyone's okay who's crashed, or there's only one person, hope they're okay.
Yeah.
And safety first, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And even like tonight, a bit more gloomy. Do you notice, like, say, the last lap you did? Like, I know you changed your visor at midway through. Do you notice? Is it darker in the trees? Are they things you're conscious of? Or again, it's not at this time, it's still okay?
Yeah, no, it did definitely go darker under the trees. On my last lap, there was three yellow flags. One at Royal Bank, and then I got a green flag after it to indicate that it's track's clear and it's fine. And then I got another yellow flag at the top of Bagaro. But I didn't get a green flag after it, so I tootled down Bagaro, and then once I got to,
it's like the 13th down.
Yeah,
down
once
here.
I got to near the 13th, I just went again, and then I got another one at Sulby Strait, and then there's no green flag. Obviously, I tootled down Sulby Strait, and then by the time I got to Sulby Bridge, I just looked behind just to make sure. Like anything, if I'd missed anything, or and there's no green flag to go again, so I just got to the Ginger Hall, and then after that, like, my full concentration, what I had in it, like, beforehand, like, had gone. Yeah. So it was just like I was in the mindset of just get home now, like less concentration. What, obviously, I still had a lot of concentration, but not what I had. Just about to be home, basically. Get back
and sit with us, obviously.
Yeah.
Just to go back again to the Sunday, then the six laps. See, that's a lot of mileage in a day. Were you like thinking later on that evening? Were you, because obviously a lot of concentration as well. Any different for you than a normal race day at Jury? Did you feel more fatigued? Eating more sausage, perhaps after.
A couple more. I just had a sore neck. A sore shoulder, and then my right leg was sore on both my ankles, because where they were on the position of the foot pegs, just getting a battering, really. But
is that something you can change, or is that just have to man up,
crack on?
Yeah, right.
Crack on with it.
see the physio as well.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, you don't want to speak for you. Probably more so your mother than your dad, because he's used to this scene. How's your mum finding it?
Yeah, she's not saying much, to be fair. She just takes a back seat and keeps, you know, she knows when it's getting real. When we go, like, it's all fun down here, but as soon as you walk up into that hole in there, it's real. She sort of hangs around when we're in the hole in there, but as soon as we get up to the start line, she just gets herself out of the way. It's just basically me and Jamie and Andy around then, and then see him off and just go for a drink or whatever we need to do in between and wait around for 20 minutes.
And the new lid, how far away is the new lid?
touchy subject.
Oh, was it?
All right. Alan's not a piece of string.
All right. Hopefully for race week.
Hopefully. We'll see.
So we'll be on to Wednesday tomorrow. So again, hopefully getting 4 or 5 laps.
Yeah, same again. As many as we can, and I'm going for really at the minute.
Right.
Just need to do as many laps as possible. Obviously, each lap's being faster and faster. So I just want to keep doing the same thing, really.
Are the guys analysing the data much that you're taking off the... Or again, is that more for further down the road?
No, unfortunately, that's another job of mine. I'm no expert at the job, but I know enough about it to be able to read just the little things you need to look out for, like the fueling of the bike. We need to make sure it's not running too lean, because if it is, it'll end up nipping up on them. So we've got to make sure the fuel and dry.
So talk about lean. What does that mean?
If it's lean, it's not getting enough fuel in there to keep it at the optimum thing, so everything gets hotter and hotter inside, and it just ends up in disaster basically, and melting your engine down. Whereas you get it to the right ratios, and this is where, like, we're quite lucky. Our bikes have got this data on it, so when Jamie comes in, I can plug in and have a look. And unfortunately, we ran out of time. We put this new engine in, and we gave it a quick run on the dyno, but we literally ran out of time to get the thing mapped. But because of what the thing logs, he can go and do a lap, and I can check it. And yeah, it did come in and it wasn't right. It was running a bit lean, but in one way it's great because it's not using much fuel, so he gets back for 2 laps. But now he just needs to be safe. And then just like the oil pressure, like we can say like Sundays it was 4.5 bar, and today it's gone down to 2. We know there's something going wrong with the engine. So instead of Jamie going out there and getting to the bottom of the brain and the thing exploding on him, we know it's time to change that engine. But you just got to look out for the fuel pressure, the oil pressure, the airbox pressures, and the fuel. And it's all just basically a lot of squiggly lines you got to take a reading from.
And is that data pretty much instantaneous then? As soon as you plug in, it'll tell you, and you can straight away, while you're fueling or whatever, go right.
Yeah, so
what
we're trying to do at the minute is now we've got Jake helping us out. He'll come in, we'll get it straight on the tyre warmers, I'll plug into the dash, we'll get the data out, I'll get out of the way while Jake refuels it. And there has been changes needed to the map, so I'll basically change the map in the programme, and then we'll plug back in, we'll fire the map in, Jamie's going to do another 2 laps, we'll come back and see where it's at then. But it's a very smart programme, and because we've got altitude here, and we've got obviously all the different things. It's got these airbox pressure switches and airbox temperatures and all that. And so we make a fuel and map, but then it's got compensation. So when the thing's going up the mountain, if it gets more airbox pressure than what it does down low, we can change it in there. So if it gets up to, say, 105 airbox pressure, we can just put it so it gets to put another 2-4%, whatever I need there. So when it's climbed a mile, that bike's automatically changing its map, but when it's coming back off the mountain, the airbox pressure knows it's not got the same anymore, so it knocks that fuel back out of it. So it's all a very, very clever system that they use it at the highest levels, British Superbikes and all that. But it takes a bit of understanding, but I know the rough guides of it, so you do need somebody to do it, really. But it's just another thing that you don't need. There's so much going on behind the scenes.
So just on that final point, something again, just I suppose sat around observing, and we touched on it there, that again, there's the I suppose the top guy's got a big team of people around them and their families as well. But this is very much ultimately, Jim, you wouldn't be sat here without the guys and the girls and the family doing everything around.
There's a lot of people in the background doing a lot of running around for you, definitely.
It doesn't stop, really. The bike will go in the van now, and take that back down to our unit, and it'll be stripped down, nut bolt. And he's done 2 nights now, so it needs a new oil filter again. Just general maintenance. Just, we take the pads out, clean the pistons on the calipers, just to make sure everything's running freely and the way it should. And it's an endless job. Jamie wasn't happy with the gear, and so that was just another job he put on us. And even
so selfish, Jamie.
Yeah, I know. even down to the stupid things, we need fuel every night, and that's just another job on the way to the grandstand. And going 40 mile an hour everywhere now, because the traffic for TT's crackers, it just nothing turns around fast anymore.
And you're working as well,
we're trying to do bits. I'm trying to be down the unit helping Andy, and we've got Andy and two other mechanics down there full time. I'm trying to go down there till about 2 o'clock and then get back up here with the bikes to have them on in the paddock for people to see. And then Andy's come up at 4 and 4:30, we got roll up the scrutineering, and then from 4 o'clock on, basically, it's flat out again because you've got to get the tyre warmers on. Yeah, we fill the tank here before it goes up, but you can't brim it, because if you brim it, and the sun gets to it, it starts breathing and it fills your overfill bottle. So you've then got to just put that extra litre or two in when you get up there, and tyre pressures. It's just, and then because Jamie's number 42 this year, they start 1 to 20, 21 to 40, and then Jamie's 40 to 60. But obviously between 40 and 60, everyone's setting off in 10-second intervals individually. There's a lot of time to be lost there. So literally as soon as you hear that tan or you go to ping, I'm sprinting up there with the bike while you sat on the start line waiting for it. I think tonight was, it proved well, because he was the first of the next lot out on the track to go, and them 10-20 seconds can be vital getting when he gets back.
Between an extra lap.
Yeah, could he get back, and if you've got 30 seconds on the board and you can get 15 seconds of fuels in, on, he's just made another lap, which is another time around that corner. Yeah. So
briefly then, on the unit you have down there, an AGR, you're open as well as a general...
Yeah, it's around the clock this time of year. We love bikes, but I hate it, because this time of year we only going to sit on a hedge and enjoy the bikes. Yeah. But like, with helping Jamie, like, we
and these stupid podcasts.
Yeah, we don't stop, and we go down there, and then we prep his bike. We come back, and it's just like Jamie's on track, and then we don't. I haven't seen a bike yet. It's just TT doesn't even exist to me this year.
Yeah, it's full on. Mm. Well, we'll let you go and rehydrate and fuel. Appreciate your time. Hopefully we get an opportunity to catch up again. Just one question, Ryan, is it giving you the bug to have a go?
I don't like this. The itch has always been there, right. But
is it itchy?
Yes, very right. Itchy, very jealous. As soon as you see Jamie go outside, you're like, what I'd do to be sat on that bike right now. Right. What I'd do. But there's already been conversations at home this you're week right. Anyway,
Yeah,
hasn't been scratched yet.
Yeah.
Whether it does, I don't know. I do want to do it. And James only tell me how great it is and make me more jealous, isn't he? So,
Jamie did say in the earlier podcast he's got the bug now. So
that's exactly that. So I've always said I'm that person that wants to come here and do this once and walk away. But I'm pretty sure we'll be sat here again next year with Jamie. So. I don't know whether we both got levers almost to be seen.
Yeah. Okay, great. I appreciate it again, joining time. Congratulations, because the progress is absolutely really good, right pace, progressing. So good luck for the rest of the week, and hopefully catch up. And thanks very much for your time.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah, no, pleasure. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Screw you guys, I'm going home.